Okay, good morning, everybody. This week's Parsha, as we know, Parshas Chayisara, talks about the death of Sarah Imenu and about the trial that Avraham Avinu had to go through, the difficulty that he went through to bury his wife. Again, it's page 249 in this sitter. For those who have this sitter, it's 249. Okay? So, what I want to discuss today, in honor of Sarah Imenu, and that which Avraham Avinu did to honor her memory, I want to talk about the mitzvah of kvura, the mitzvah of burial. And there's an issue specifically in the mitzvah of kvura that I want to discuss, which is one that really has bothered me for a very long time. You know, unfortunately, we read a lot and we see pictures and we see videos and we see many different things that cue us into what's happening in Israel. And we've seen so much of the terrorist activity that takes place. And often when you watch the scene immediately following a terrorist activity, what we see is there's a tremendous organization by the name of Zaka. And Zaka deals with taking care of those who have passed away. And something that has bothered me for the longest time is that Zaka will go and equally take care of the Jewish victims who have been killed by a terrorist attack, as well as the body of the terrorist itself who has just committed the crime. The only difference is that Zaka will put the terrorist in a black bag and they will put the Jewish body, unfortunately, in a white bag. It went so far that recently somebody from the terrorist camp wrote an article stating that they feel it's discrimination that Zaka puts them, gives them different treatment than everybody else. Now, as far as I'm concerned, they're lucky that they get anything. Now, this is a question that's bothered me for a long time, and it's something that I decided to look into. What does the halacha have to say about such unfortunate circumstances? You take a little bit further. I watched the video this week. There was a pigua 2 weeks ago in which somebody by the name of Mr. Richard Lakin, I think his name was, Lakin, passed away this week. And his granddaughter and his wife together gave a video interview. And one of the things that they mentioned in the video was that here he was in the hospital. I think he was in a coma. I don't think he woke up from the time that he was injured. And right across the hall from him, directly across the hall from him, was the room of the terrorist who had basically killed him. In the end, Mr. Lackery lost his life. But the granddaughter was saying, how are we supposed to feel that we look across the hall, here's my grandfather, an innocent victim, who's sitting here, and the very same hospital, the very same doctors are sitting there, giving treatment, administering treatment to this patient, and taking care of him. Like, is that really right? Does that really make sense? Are we really allowing all of their visitors to come and visit them? It's a difficult thing. She described how difficult it was for her to sit there and watch her grandfather, and right across the hall, she's watching this terrorist who's rehabilitating himself, who's getting better, and one day he's going to go out and do the same thing again. And here we are treating these people. So I think it's something that, I don't know if it bothers anyone else, it certainly bothers me a lot, and it's something that I just want to talk about a little bit today. Let's begin with the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Again, page 249. The Mishnah has a Mishnah Yud Ches. And this is a Mishnah that is commonly misunderstood, so let's learn it together. Hu haya omer. Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem. This is Rabbi Kiva talking, the great Tana Rabbi Kiva, and he says, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem. Man is beloved, Shenivra B'Tselem, because we were created B'Tselem Elokim. Now what does this refer to? What kind of man? Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem, who? Is that referring to a Jew is created B'Tselem Elokim? Doesn't mean even a non-Jew is created B'Tselem Elokim? This is a very important question. Now, read a little bit further. Chiva Yisera Nodaslo Shenivra B'Tselem Shenemar Ki B'Tselem Elokim Asa Esa Adam. And then the Mishnah goes further. Chaviv in Yisrael Shenikru Banam Lamakom. That seems to be an extra level, an extra special degree of love that we have. Shenikru Banam Lamakom, that we are called the children of God Himself. So what you see is the Mishnah is obviously describing two different groups of people. Number one, Chaviv Adam Shenivra B'Tselem, sounds like that's going on. Everybody who's created is created B'Tselem Elokim. And then you have the secondary category of love, which is the children of God Himself, which are the Jewish people. Now, the Rambam writes, how exactly do we understand what Tselem Elohim actually means? We all say, oh, everyone's created in the image of God. What does that mean, you're created in the image of God? What is the Tselem Elohim that we all possess? So the Rambam writes, both in the Yad HaChazaka and in the Mor Nevuchim. Mor Nevuchim is the Rambam Sefer on philosophy. So the Rambam explains that the Tselem Elohim that we are created with is the fact that we are created with Das, the fact that we were given a mind, that we can make decisions, that we can make choices, that life is not carved out for us, that we have a right to make decisions that are really going to have consequences in the way our life plays itself out. That's the way the Rambam understands Tselem Elohim. Others explain, the Maharal writes, that perhaps Tselem Elohim does not mean the fact that we have Das. Animals also have some sort of Das, maybe, perhaps. They can decide whether they want to eat now, whether they want to eat later. They have some sort of Das. However, he says, perhaps the fact that Tselem Elohim is that we have a Koma Zakufa, that we are created as the ones who are in charge of the world. We are created that we have sovereignty, that we're in control of everything around us, that we have a right to be in control of everything that lives on this world. And therefore, he says, this is what the Tselem Elohim means. Well, either way, whether you assume it's the Das or it's the Koma Zakufa, that should apply both to Jews and non-Jews alike. And that's something that we obviously have to remind ourselves of, that Tselem Elohim is something that not only Jewish people possess. Tselem Elohim is something that every human being that's created in this world, Jew and non-Jew alike, possess equally. We all have a Tselem Elohim. What the Mishnah tells us is that there's a chiyuv above and beyond. There's a love that God shows us above and beyond everyone else, shenikru banam lamakam, that we are also God's children. Not only do we have a Tselem Elohim, but we also have a very deep and special relationship with Him. But because we assume that everyone is created b'Tselem Elohim, the Tiferes Yisrael writes on this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, that means that we all have the obligation to treat others respectfully. And it doesn't matter if they're our brothers, if they're Jews, it doesn't matter if they're non-Jews, we have an obligation to treat everyone respectfully, shelo levayi. Certainly we are not allowed to ever embarrass or put somebody down. And that's something that often is mistaken. People don't understand that this is an obligation that lays both to our community and outside of our own community, not only because of Chilul Hashem, because we're afraid what they're going to say about us. We have an obligation because they are created in Tselem Elohim. So now let's go a little bit further. We have in Parshas Kisetze. And the obvious question is, why do we have to go to Parshas Kisetze to learn this mitzvah of Kvura? Why don't we go to our parsha where we have Chayisara and Adam, and I'm sorry, Avram Avinu is going out of his way to try and bury his wife Sarah, and he pays an exorbitant amount of money to bury her, so we'll see in a couple of minutes why the Gemara chooses not to learn from Avram Avinu. But let's start with the Pasuk in Kisetze. Over here the Pasuk is talking about when the Beis Din has to administer capital punishment, and now they have to kill somebody, and they want everybody to learn the lesson. So what do? They make it a very public statement, and they want everyone to know and be aware what will happen if you violate such and such an avera. This will be your end. This is what's going to happen to you. Says the pasuk, Lo selin nivlaso ala eitz. Even though you want everybody to know about it, even though you want to make a pronouncement and you want to make sure that everybody learns from this unfortunate circumstance, still, the pasuk says, Lo selin nivlaso ala eitz. You are not allowed to leave that body after you have administered capital punishment. You are not allowed to leave that body hanging on a tree. Ki kaver tikburena by yom hahu. Why? Why must you bury that body? Why do you have to make sure not to leave it hanging on a tree, even though you want to make a pronouncement to the world? Ki kilalas Elohim talui. Because it's as if God Himself is hanging on that tree. What does that mean? Now, the rest of the pasuk we'll come back to later, but Rashi explains on the next line. What it means is zilzulo shamelachu. It's an embarrassment to God Himself. As we just saw in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos, we are considered banim lamakom. We are considered God's children. So what's going to happen? Says Rashi, mashal shnei achim to umim. Imagine you have two identical twins. Shehayidom zelazeh, they look exactly alike. Echad nasa melech, one of them rises up and becomes the king of the land. Ve'echad nitfas lelistius v'nitla. And one of them becomes a criminal and ultimately is hung, and ultimately is killed and hung for his criminal activity. Imagine anyone who passes by is going to say, look what happened. Look, they hung the king. They're identical twins. People don't know how to distinguish. People don't know the very detailed features on the faces to really understand the difference. Says Rashi, that's exactly what happens when you administer capital punishment. Yes, sometimes, unfortunately, we have to do it. But it does not give us a right to leave that body out there for people to see. Because it means anyone who walks by says, look, it's as if God Himself is hanging there. Because we were all created b'Tselem Elohim. We were created in the image of God. Now, this is a very interesting halacha. a very interesting halacha. And it would seem, if it's all about Tzelem Elokim, so I would have said, what? This should apply to Jews and non-Jews alike. Correct? Because everyone was created with Tzelem Elokim. Now, not so fast. Over here, Rashi really says, we're not talking so much about Tzelem Elokim, we're talking about Dmus Diyukno. It's as if we're the brother of God. It's as if we're the child of God. We're different. We're more than just the Tzelem Elokim. I think Tzelem Elokim mandates that we have to respect people b'chayim. While they're alive, we have to respect them. But if here we find a concept that we go beyond life, and we assume that you have to also respect the banim lamakam, you have to respect the children of God, because it's as if God himself is there. So I think we'll see a little bit further what happens when we go into the mitzvah of Kuvur itself, but with regard to the Isser of leaving a body hanging on a tree, unfortunately it's hard for us to think about that, but the Isser of leaving a body out, even if you want people to learn that lesson, the Isser seems to be by Jews. That's what you see from Rashi over here. We go a little bit further, and it's interesting, the Sifri learns out from this Pasuk over here, that obviously if the Pasuk says you're not allowed to leave a body hanging in disgrace outside, obviously that means you have to take it a little bit further and also assume that you are never allowed to do nivul hames. What does nivul hames mean? Well, if you're not allowed to leave the body out there, then obviously you're not allowed to mutilate the body. You're not allowed to do anything after the body after the life is taken away. You're not allowed to do anything to ruin the body that was. Now, this is a very important halacha, and that is because it comes up very often about autopsies. What right do we have to do an autopsy if there's an iser nivul hames? We don't really have a right to mutilate the body, and even though you're well-intentioned, why should that make a difference? Let's say I'm well-intentioned. I want to be Mechal Shabbos, and I have the best intentions. I want to be Mechal Shabbos. I want to drive to shul. Why? Because I want to go daven in shul. Well, intentions don't really matter. God said, don't drive to shul on Shabbos, so it's too bad. Even though you want to go to shul and you want to do wonderful things, intentions don't always make a difference. You have to follow the halacha. So why is it that we're allowed to do an autopsy? Well, you'll say, we want to do an autopsy in order to save lives, in order to do medical research. So the answer is, Pikuach Nefesh is always Docha everything. We know that Pikuach Nefesh is always the most important factor. So when there's a life on the line, the Inod Yehuda writes, as long as there is a chola bifaneinu, if there's a reasonable consideration that there's a chola in front of us that will actually benefit from the fact that we're doing an autopsy on the body, then obviously we would be allowed to do so. Why? Because if you feel that that's a Pikuach Nefesh situation, there's somebody else who's sick with the exact same illness right here, and we know if we dissect this body, if we do an autopsy, we'll find something that will help us for the research for this new patient, so then we would be allowed to do so. Well, the Nodi Yehuda says that's only if you have a chola b'faneinu. That's only if you have somebody else in the same hospital right here, and we know about it, then you're allowed to violate the halacha of nivul hames. But if not, you don't have a right to do so. Says the Chazon Ish, nowadays, when we have a global community, when we do medical research here, and it's used in China, it's used on the other side of the world, you can't say that everything is dictated by chola b'faneinu. We consider the sick patient in China to be chola b'faneinu. Why? Because we all share research with each other. When you do an autopsy here, we assume that's going to help for the medical research somewhere else in the world. And therefore, we would assume that nowadays, an autopsy, look, if you're doing an autopsy just for no good reason, that's not the case. But let's say somebody has a rare disease. Let's say somebody has a rare illness, and we're trying to find out some research about this particular illness. And the best way to do that is by dissecting the body, by doing an autopsy, then we would be allowed to do so, even though we assume that the person who is suffering from the same illness is not bifaneinu. Even though they're on the other side of the world, even though there's only a couple of people in the world who are sick with this illness, still we would allow that to be done, because that's considered a pikuach nefesh bifaneinu, says the Chazon Ish, because nowadays in our global community, we assume everyone is considered one pikuach nefesh. Now, the Gemara just tells us over here that the psukim tell us you're not allowed to leave the body hanging out there. Now the Gemara goes further and says in the third entry on the source sheet, Sanhedrin Daf Mem Vav, Amar Reb Shimon Yochai, Kal Hamalones Meso Over Below Sase. Says the Gemara, if you leave a body without burying it, over below Sase, you are violating a mitzvah, a lo sase shenamar, because the pasuk says, Ki Kavar Tikberenu. You have an obligation to bury that body. Ask the Gemara, why don't you learn from the fact that Avraham Avinu buried his wife Sarah? Why do you have to go all the way to one of the last parshios in the Torah? Why do you learn it from there? Why don't we learn from our parsha? So the Gemara says, no, maybe that was just the practice in those days. Who said that that's what you have to do? Maybe it was just the respectful thing to do, and that's why Avraham Avinu was doing it. But who said that the Torah says you have to do so? Says the Gemara, why don't you learn from the fact that God himself buries Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu dies by Yamashra Moshe, and it says that God buried him. So there's no better way to learn than from God himself, I would think. Says the Gemara, nah, striking. Says the Gemara, maybe God just didn't want to change from the minhag that the world has. If the practice in the whole world is you bury somebody who passes away, well, God felt it's right to follow the practice of the world. So the Gemara says, we can't even learn from God himself because nobody said that that's what you have to do. Maybe it's just the right thing to do, ethically, morally. So therefore, we need a new pasuk which teaches us, ki kavur tigberenu. The Gemara says, you have to go ahead and bury the person and show them the respect even after they pass away. That's what the Gemara says. However, what we find at the end is very surprising. The last line, the last part of the sentence in number Gimel, im helinu lichvodo muter, says the Gemara. What was that? I don't. I'm sorry. Can somebody maybe move closer so we can share? Thank you. So the Gemara says over here, im helinu lichvodo, even though you're not allowed to leave a body without burying it, still, we assume im helinehu lichvodu, if you leave over the body because you think there's going to be more honor brought to this body by waiting, that is going to be considered permissible. Now, that's a very surprising statement. That's a very surprising statement. Because you take that into other contexts of halacha and you'll say, well, if I think it's going to bring me more honor, it should be permissible. Let's go back to our being Michal Shabbos example. It's going to be very embarrassing if I don't show up to Shul this Shabbos. Everyone's going to notice, where's the rabbi? So what do? So I'll drive to Shul. Why? Because it will bring me more honor. What kind of consideration is that? Do we allow such a consideration? Helineo lechvodo is permissible? If you're the reason why you're violating the halacha of burial is because you think by extending till tomorrow, more people will show up at the levaya. You'll get better people to give hespedim. We'll be better prepared. The children want to come in from Israel. The relatives, whatever it is. Why is that a factor? Why should that be permissible? So, I believe the reason is because the whole idea of why you need to bury someone in the first place is because you're looking out for their honor. Well, if you want to display the greatest honor to them and you feel by waiting an extra day, by waiting an extra night, you're going to display a greater honor to them than by doing it right away, then obviously you're allowed to do so. If the whole objective here is to honor the person after they die, well then we have to look for the greatest honor. The objective of Shabbos is not to give Shai Shechter kavod, it's not to give me honor. The objective of Shabbos is to keep Shabbos. But the objective of the mitzvah of Kvura is to show respect, to show honor to other people. And therefore we assume, im helineo lechvod, it would be permissible. For those who were here last week, we spoke about the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. Now the problem is the Rambam, for those who remember, the Rambam told us last week that there's one overarching swooping principle in which we put all of these mitzvahs of Bikur Cholim, Kvuras HaMesim, Menachem HaVelim, we put them all together and we say, that's all part of the mitzvah of Gemilas Chasadim. So it's a little bit of a question, why, if the Rambam assumes that way, why should we then say over here, a new pasuk of Kavur Tikberenu, we have to learn it out from a new pasuk? Didn't the Rambam tell us last week that it's part of the overarching principle of Gemilas Chasadim? So that's an interesting question to think about. There is a discussion that there were some communities in Europe that were concerned that apparently it happened one time that they put someone, they buried them in the ground, and then later on they heard them knocking. I don't know if the story is true or not, but that's what they say. So therefore the government made a rule in the times of the Chassam Sofer, they made a rule that nobody is allowed to bury anybody without waiting 3 days until we know for sure that the person is no longer alive. We don't want to take any chances, okay? So it's strange, and that's something that's discussed in the poskim. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, well, if the reason why you're waiting is because the government told you you have to wait 3 days, so then obviously you're not in violation of this mitzvah, of this iser, because you're not doing it to be mevaze, you're not doing it to take away from the honor of the person, you're doing it because you're looking out for them. So the Chassam Sofer says, well, it's ridiculous because we don't really have to be concerned of such a thing. Such a thing never happens. The doctors, I assume it never happens, but he says that the doctors always know how to determine the time of death, and they always know to make sure that there's no more living entity in front of us when we go ahead and make the funeral arrangements. I would imagine that is the assumption as well. Now, there's a major discussion. How long does one have to wait in order to be in violation of this mitzvah? It says you have to bury the person right away. So what does it mean? 5 minutes later, you have to take care of it? You have to call the Chevra Kadisha right away? Or does it mean waiting overnight? Does it mean waiting just till Shkia? That's a big discussion in the poskim. What we know is halacha lemaisa. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that if you're waiting for the honor of the mace, if you're waiting, says the Shulchan Aruch, either because you think that there's a more respectable Chevra Kadisha that will take care of this person, you think that you can, back in the times of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, they used to hire sabdanim, they used to hire professional eulogizers, I guess we'll call them. They used to hire professionals to do it. They didn't have people who were on call to do it. It wasn't always a given that the family would do it. They would hire someone who would really evoke people's emotions. So therefore, Shulchan Aruch says, let's say you know that person is out of town, or you know they're booked for the day, and if you wait till tomorrow, you'll have a more respectable funeral. Says the Shulchan Aruch, obviously you would be allowed to do that. And the later poskim write also that not only are you allowed to wait for those reasons, you're also allowed to wait if you feel that family members would want to take part and participate in the Levaya. Now, we'll talk in a few minutes about whether the rule in Eretz Yisrael is the same as in America, because as we know, very often in Eretz Yisrael, they'll just bury right away, and it's like a frenzy. And before we knew it, the person, like 5 minutes ago, we thought they were alive. 5 minutes later, they're not only passed away, but they're already in the ground. So it's a very strange thing in Eretz Yisrael. We'll talk about that soon. So let's look at a Gemara. The Gemara tells us, from the fact that we have a double phraseology of kavur tikberenu, it means not only do you have to bury the person, but tikberenu, the extra word, tells us that you also have to bury them in the ground. It has to be in the karka ha'adam. It has to be in the ground. Now, what exactly does that mean? The Medrash writes a very fascinating comment, number Dalid. Says the Medrash, as we know, Adam Arishon was created from the ground. Vayikach afer min ha'adam. It says that God took some earth from the ground, and he creates Adam Arishon. Says the Medrash, fascinating. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Adam HaRishon, b'zeh hapecha toch alechem. God tells Adam HaRishon, you're going to suffer because now you made a mistake. What happened? He eats from the Eitz Hadas, and now he's suffering. Now he's going to be punished. What's the punishment? B'zeh hapecha toch alechem. You're going to have to work very hard in order to make a living. Ad shuvcha el ha'adama. Now this is a curse that's going to last until the last day of your life. Ad shuvcha el ha'adama. Until you return yourself to the ground. Ki mimena lakachta, because from there you were originally taken, says the Medrash. Ki afar ata ve'alafa tashuv, amar lo. God says to Adam HaRishon, kometz afar shel adama shenevresa mimenu, I took a clump of dirt and I created you. Says God to Adam HaRishon, lo gezula biyadcha, now you're walking around with a piece of my dirt. You're a ganav. You stole some of my land. So God says to Adam HaRishon, after all is said and done, after you live through your whole life, we're going to put you back where you came from. Why? Because that's really what you are. Is that a good thing? Bad thing? Don't know. I guess someone doesn't like what I just said. So the Medrash seems to indicate that the Medrash seems to say pretty clearly that the reason why the body has to be given back to the ground after life is over is because we are in some way a ganav. We are in some way on loan. We took something from God. God created a world. He took some of the dirt. He gave it to us. And now we have to give it back. And because we have an obligation to give it back, that's why we have to do kvura in the ground. Now, what exactly does it mean, kvura in the ground? So this is a discussion in the Rishonim. Let's look at number Hey. The Ran writes in Sanhedrin there on the Gemara, Ein yotze midei chovas mitzvas kvura ele bekarka. Says the Ran, you can only fulfill your obligation of kvura if the person is actually put in the ground. Now, what does that mean? Ach, says the Ran, ein sarach shatia kvuras hameis bekarka mamish. That doesn't mean you have to actually have the person touching the ground. Ele keminik chachme hatalmud bekvuras hakuchen. It just means, put the person in an aron, do it respectfully, and you put the aron in the ground. That, says the Ran, is good enough. It doesn't mean it has to be touching the ground. Now, this is a major question nowadays because American government does not allow the body to be out of a casket, to be out of a coffin. You have to bury in a coffin. So you go to, take it off the recording maybe, but you go to more Haredi kinds of communities, I believe. They always break the coffin. Once they put it in the ground, they break it, and they think no one's going to find out. Not sure how it's been so many years and no one's found out. But the reason why they do that is because they believe that you have to actually have the person touching the ground, even though it's illegal. So I'm not sure how they get around that. But the Ran writes over here, you don't need to have bikarka mamish. It doesn't have to actually be touching the ground itself. However, the Ramban disagrees. Let's look at number Vav. The Ramban disagrees and he says that it has to be actually touching the ground. Skip to the second line, where the Ramban tells us, Pirush, sheyitlu hadaf hatachton sheba aron, you should take out the bottom board of the casket, v'yashkiveu ala aret shekvuras karka mitzvahi, says the Ramban. Not only do we assume you have to put the casket into the ground, but you have to make sure that the person's body is actually touching the ground. Why is that? Because we have this Medrash, where the Medrash tells us we have an obligation after life is over to go ahead and return ourselves to where we came from. Where do we come from? Afar min ha'adama. The Medrash says we're considered ganavim, we're considered on loan. Our bodies are only on loan, and until we're done and we put it back where we came from, we assume that we have not fulfilled our obligation. Now, parenthetically, there's a very, very fascinating point, which I thought was fascinating, I think, that the Ramban on this week's Parsha, for those who learn Ramban on Chumash, the Ramban has a very interesting comment on our Parsha, and that is, Avram Avinu is negotiating to buy Ma'aretz HaMachpelah, and his wife tragically passes away, and he's just coming back from the Akedah, and the story is terrible, and Avram Avinu says, if you will be so kind to bury my wife, Milafane, right here in front of me, then let's go ahead and do this deal. Fine. Says the Ramban, what do you mean, if you'll be so kind to bury my wife, and if not, then what? Then what are you going to do? You have a different place to go? So the Ramban questions, what exactly did Avram Avinu mean when he's sitting and negotiating with the people to buy Ma'aretz HaMachpelah? What's his negotiating tactic? If you'll be so kind, then I'll buy it. And if not, what are you going to do next? So the Ramban says, if not, Avram Avinu says, I'll just bury her in a casket. I don't need you. So some ask, what do you mean? The Ramban himself is the one who just told us that the person has to be buried touching the ground. So how can the Ramban say over here that Avram Avinu tells those who he's negotiating with, you know what, if you'll be so kind to bury my wife here, that'll be great. And if not, I'll go and bury her somewhere else, just in a casket. I don't need you guys anyway. What do you mean you don't need them? You, Ramban, just told us that there's a mitzvah to actually bury the person in the ground, touching the ground. So what kind of alternative is that for Avram Avinu? So some want to suggest a beautiful interpretation that based on the Medrash that we saw, what's the reason why a person has to put their body back in the ground? Why is it that we need to have the body touching the ground? The Medrash told us before in Amar Dalid, because it's as if we're on loan. God gave us a body. God gave us some piece of the Adama, and here we are. We defiled it. We didn't do what He wanted. We didn't follow all the rules that we were supposed to. So God says, you know what? Give me back what I gave you, because I'm not sure why I gave it to you. You didn't really do what you were supposed to. Well, some suggest, let's say by Moshe Rabbeinu. What does it say about Moshe Rabbeinu? He was the most perfect person, Isha Elohim. Moshe Rabbeinu rose himself to a level in his life where he becomes an Isha Elohim. At the end of his life, what are we told? At the end of his life, it says, "V'lo yada ish es kvuraso." Nobody knew where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried. In fact, the Gemara says in Sota Daf Yudalid that they sent out spies to try to find where he was buried, and they went here and they went there and they couldn't find it, and they sent out detectives, and no one was able to figure out where can we place the kvura of Moshe Rabbeinu. Where was it? How do we figure out? How can we find everything else in the world? We can't find the kvura of Moshe Rabbeinu. It sounds very strange. Some want to suggest what it means is because Moshe Rabbeinu did not require a kvura. He lived such a perfect life. There was nothing for him to return. God gave him a life, God gave him a body, and Moshe Rabbeinu did the best job that anyone could possibly do with the life that he was given. And therefore there was no need, there was no necessity for Moshe Rabbeinu to be buried at all. Because it's not like his life was on loan. God gave me a life and I did everything that I possibly could have done with it. That's perhaps what it means, lo yada ish es kvuraso. No one was able to find the burial plot of Moshe Rabbeinu because in fact, he did not have one. He went up to the heavens after his death, and he was not buried. That's perhaps what it means. This is what the Kli Chemda suggests. And therefore, perhaps along those lines, the Kli Chemda says, when you talk about this Ramban by Sari Imenu, what do you mean? Avraham Avinu says, if you're going to be so kind, I'll bury my wife over here. And if not, what are you going to do? That's the question that they asked. If not, Avraham Avinu says, I'll bury her not in the ground. What do you mean you'll bury her not in the ground? Don't you know? There's a mitzvah, the Ramban, you yourself said there's a mitzvah to bury somebody in the ground. The answer is, because the Medrash tells us that Sarah was one of those people, one of those very unique individuals who was Mesa Belochet. Sarah Imenu did not do any transgressions throughout her life. She did everything she was supposed to. So when you talk about somebody of that nature, perhaps there's no obligation to bury them in the ground because their life is not on loan. They're doing everything that they're supposed to do, and God doesn't demand of that person to give back what they were given in their lives. So that's just an interesting tidbit. Now, we mentioned before, for some reason, when it comes to stories that happen in Eretz Yisrael, for some reason, we're in a big frenzy to get them buried right away. So where does that come from? So, first of all, we have a practice in Chutz Laretz where we send often we'll send, you know, if somebody is of the means to do so, we'll send the body to Eretz Yisrael to be buried. Where does that come from? I always find it very strange. It's off-putting. Your whole life you live in Chutz Laretz, and now you have to send, like, you know, the dead body afterward to Eretz Yisrael. It's like a little strange. No? Anyone agree? I think it's weird that, you know, like, we have a pasuk here, lo satame asad mascha. The pasuk says, don't be metame Eretz Yisrael. So here we are. Our whole lives, we're enjoying Chutz Laretz, everything. We're full of gashmias. We're full of all the wonderful riches of the world. And then, okay, so now let's do the burial in Israel. Like, we should fill up the whole Israel with burial plots everywhere. Is that really what Israel is all about? So it's a strange thing. So where does it come from? It comes from a very good source. Let's look at number Zion. The Psikta, which is a Maimer Chazal, Al Hakasav Eirid Lahatzilo Miyad Mitzrayim Ula Haloso Min Haaretz Ahi Al Eretz Tova Rechava Al Eretz Zavaschala B'Dvash. Moshe Rabbeinu is told, God is going to go down. Va'eirid Lahatzilo Miyad Mitzrayim. I'm going to go down to save them from Mitzrayim. Ula Haloso Min Haaretz Ahi. I'm going to take them up from that land. Where am I going to take them? Al Eretz Tova Rechava Al Eretz Zavaschala B'Dvash. What does the Psikta say over there? Eretz Tova. What does it mean, Eretz Tova? Means number one, Tova Lachayim and Tova Lameisim. It means that it's good for those who are alive, and it's also good for those who are no longer alive. Why? Because the pasuk says, V'chiper admaso amo. Simply translated, and you will gain an atonement from the ground. What does that mean? So the Gemara says in Ksubas Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, that somebody who's buried in Eretz Yisrael will gain an atonement. It's as if you're covered tachas ha-mizbeach. It's as if you are right next to the mizbeach. So that's what it means. I'm not sure exactly. But what we see clearly is that Chazal tell us there is something very unique and special to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So that's where the practice comes from. Now the Ramban writes that even though we spoke over here about the violation of waiting to bury somebody who passes away, that is talking about in Chutz Laretz. If you wait for no good reason, we said you're allowed to wait if the reason is because you want to give more honor, you want to display more kavod for the person who passed away. But let's say you have no good reason. You just wait. You wait. I don't have time today. So you wait for another day. Says the Ramban, obviously you're going to be in violation of the mitzvah of kavur tikburena by Yom Ha'u. But the Ramban says, what about in Eretz Yisrael? The Ramban says in Eretz Yisrael, you add on another iser, because the end of the pasuk that we started with, if you look at the first entry on the source sheet, the part that we skipped, the first entry on the source sheet, the pasuk ends, v'lo seitame asad mascha. Says the Ramban, you are not allowed to defile the land. What does it mean to defile the land? Says the Ramban, if you have somebody in Eretz Yisrael who passes away, not only are you in violation of the regular din of kavur tikburenu by Yom Ha'u that you have to bury the person on that day, but there's an added dimension of v'lo seitame asad mascha. That, says the Ramban, is something that we have to think about. Now, the Gemara says in Baba Kama Daf Pei Beis, goes even a little further. It says, not only do we assume, like, let's say, like the Ramban, that v'lo seitame asad mascha, that Eretz Yisrael seems to be more serious than everywhere else, but the Gemara says, Yerushalayim is even more serious than that. Says the Gemara, Asara dvarim nemru b'Yerushalayim. There are 10 halachos that are restrictions in Yerushalayim. 10 halachos that you have to follow if you live in Yerushalayim proper. Not Yerushalayim the way we know it now. It means the old city of Yerushalayim, the old Yerushalayim. So what exactly does the Gemara say? So it goes through a whole list, but one of those is, Ein malinim es hames. You are never allowed to leave a body without burying it. So the Rishonim asked there, what do you mean? Isn't that, what does that have to do with Yerushalayim? You're not allowed to do that in New York either. Kavur tikburenu by Yom Ha'u. So what does the Gemara mean? There's something special and unique about Yerushalayim that you have to bury right away. Don't we have to bury right away everywhere? So what does it mean? Ein malinin es hames. Says the Shita Mukubetz is there on Baba Metzia, on Baba Kama, that the reason why the Gemara singles out Yerushalayim is because what it means is that in Yerushalayim, in contrast to the rest of the world, meaning in the rest of the world, we said, helineu lechvodo is permissible. If you're leaving over the body because you think it's going to display more honor by waiting till tomorrow, by waiting till the next day, you're allowed to do so. But in Yerushalayim, you're not allowed to do that. In Yerushalayim, we assume there's such an intense degree of kedusha, you cannot leave a body waiting around, even if you have the best of intentions. Even if you're doing it because you want more people to show up to the funeral because you want to display more honor to the person, you have to bury right away. And this is why we find, very interestingly, this is why we find so often, you hear about somebody passes away in Yerushalayim, right away they do the kfura, right away they do the levaya. It's like strange a little bit. They don't even give a chance for the children to come. Perhaps the reason is because the Gemara says over here that's something that's unique to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is considered on a more elevated madrega than everywhere else, and therefore we have to do it right away. there's unfortunately a shaila that comes up very, very often in that Rabbanim get, and that is, what's the status of a nafil when you have a stillborn, unfortunately? So what happens with that? So very often in the hospital, they don't right away bury a stillborn child. It's not always the obligation of the parents to take care of. It's not always the obligation of the hospital. And sometimes a nafil gets left between the cracks, and it's not really clear whether or not there's an obligation to bury a nafil. This is a big, big discussion in the Achronim. It's a major discussion, and very often they want to use those kinds of bodies for medical research or for different things. It's a big discussion. If the shaila should ever come up, it's something that needs to be spoken about, because it's not a simple answer whether this mitzvah of kura applies to a stillborn, and at what stage do we assume that the stillborn would be considered a regular child. So now, we get to the halachos of kura, and we just outline much of the halacha. And the question is, when you have an Israeli soldier, let's take the good part of the question. I mean, it's not good, but let's leave the terrorist out for a minute. I didn't mean to say that. It's not good at all. Let's say you have, unfortunately, an Israeli soldier who's in a milchama. They're in the middle of fighting the war. And we know, if one man is down, they do everything they can to save that person. And not only to save that person if they're still alive, but it means to save that person even if they have already lost their life. To retrieve the body, the Israeli soldiers will do whatever they can to bring that person back. And not only that, you have a terrorist who comes and does some sort of pigua. Right away you have the Hatzalah members, and you have the Zaka comes in and they want to save people's lives. Let's say there are people whose lives were already taken. So now Zaka puts their lives on the line, because you never know, there could be another terrorist right behind the first one. Zaka puts their life on the line to go and jump into the line of fire and take care of these bodies. Is that something that is permissible? Is that something that's encouraged? Is that allowed? For this mitzvah of kvura, how far do we take it? Why should we assume that a person should do something even a little bit dangerous to fulfill the mitzvah of kvura? We wouldn't tell you to do that for any other mitzvah in the Torah. So why should this be any different? So this is a big question. Let's learn a little bit of Navi together. We have a number Ches, a story in Shmuel Aleph. This is the last parak in Shmuel Aleph. And the story is, a couple of weeks ago we spoke about it, how Shaul HaMelech realizes he's about to be killed, and he's about to be captured by the enemy, and he decides to take his own life. So now Shaul HaMelech loses his life, and many others around him lose their lives as well. Here they are in the middle of the battlefield, and nobody's taking care of them. And the Navi goes on to tell the story that the inhabitants of the city of Yavesh Gilad put themselves into danger to go and retrieve the bodies of Shaul HaMelech and his children. Let's read the psukim together. Vayihimi macharas, and it was the next day. Vayabo plishtim lefashet es hachalalim, and the plishtim, the Philistines, came along. Lefashet es hachalalim means to strip the bodies, to mutilate them. Vayimtzu es shal veshloshes banav nefalim behar Gilboa. And they see, lo and behold, Shaul HaMelech has passed away. He's the enemy. And they feel that they're heroes, because they've won. Vayichrusu es rosho, vayifashtu es keila, vayishtuchu ba'eretz plishtim saviv levaser beis hatzaveim ve'esa'am. So it says that they're defiling the body of Shaul HaMelech. Let's skip down a little bit. Vayishmu elav yishvei Yavesh Gilad. And those inhabitants of the city Yavesh Gilad heard what was happening. Eis asher asu plishtim l'shal. They had heard that the Philistines had just defiled the body of Shaul HaMelech. Vayakumu kol ishchayil. Every able-bodied man got up from the city of Yavesh Gilad. Vayelchu kol halayla. They went out in a surprise mission in the middle of the night. Vayikhu es gevias shal ves gevias banav mechomas beishan. They went and they snuck in to go and retrieve the bodies of Shaul HaMelech and his children. Now Rashi over there asked the question, what right did they have to put their lives in danger? They knew that Shaul HaMelech was no longer alive. So what right did they have to put their lives in danger? Again, one is allowed to put his life in danger, perhaps, to save someone's life. But over here, you know that he's no longer alive. And all that's in front of you is the mitzvah to bury him. Why is that mitzvah more important than anything else? What right do you have to sacrifice, to give up your own life, to go on a surprise mission in the middle of the night to retrieve a body, if you know that you might lose your life for that? You would never have to do that for anything else. So why did they do so? This is the question that Rashi asks over there on the Pasuk in the very end of Shmuel Aleph. And Rashi answers, well, the answer is because Shaul HaMelech had done a tremendous favor for them many years earlier, so therefore they felt like they owed it to him. So therefore, if I feel somebody did me a favor, I'm allowed to do something outlandish against the Torah because I feel like I owe it to them? So I'm not sure exactly how Rashi answers the question. I think the question is a very strong one. What right did they have to give up, to perhaps sacrifice their own lives in order to retrieve the bodies of Shaul HaMelech? It's a major question. You go into the Halacha L'maisa nowadays. This is spoken about in great detail in the halachic literature nowadays because this is something that's discussed in the Israeli army. What right, how far do we have to go to retrieve bodies of those who have fallen? Rabbi Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, who's the son-in-law of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, writes, let's read together, number tests. Kavod HaBrios einenu docha pikuach nefesh. Yes, Kavod HaBrios is very important, and Kavod HaBrios allows us to violate Isurim in the Torah. Kavod HaBrios allows us to do things that we normally would not tell you to do. However, he says, Eino docha pikuach nefesh. Kavod HaBrios, as important as it is, you're not allowed to put your life on the line in order to have someone's dignity be honored. You're not allowed to do that. Sharei kol haTorah nidchas mipnei pikuach nefesh, v'lachein vaday, says Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, ein lahachnis b'makam sakana v'sofik sakana kedei l'kayim mitzvos gvura af shel harugim. Halacha l'maisa, we don't have a right. An Israeli soldier does not have a right. We'll see in a minute other opinions. But he says an Israeli soldier does not have a right to put himself in a line of fire, in the sakana, to go and retrieve a body. Kavod HaBrios is important, but not that important. I have to save my own life first. Because that dvarim brurim ve'ein bahem safik. This is obvious. He says, ein bahem safik. There is no question about it. You are not allowed to do so. What's interesting is that his father-in-law, the great posek Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, disagreed. And his father-in-law writes as follows. And he comes from a very different angle. He gives a very different consideration. In number Yud, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, Yesh heter lehistakin, you are allowed to put your life into danger in order to get back a body. What does he write? Hapigia hamora le'it b'chayalim, the moral destruction that will come out of the fact that a chayal knows that if he's killed, nobody's going to care about them. Sheroim shem heim yiplu chalalim, that a chayal will know in the back of his mind that if unfortunately, tragically, he loses his life, no one's going to care and no one's going to do anything to get them back. Hem yishkevu b'tzad, they're just going to be left there in the field. Va'af echad lo yitapa b'hem, hu goreim chashav b'ruach halachima. That is a destructive consequence when we talk about trying to fight a war. A soldier will not fight as hard if they know that they won't be brought back. V'alachein mahave pikuach nefesh. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, this is pikuach nefesh. Because what are they fighting for? They're fighting for the Jewish people. And if a soldier is not going to fight with all their heart, that's an issue of pikuach nefesh. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, if we reassure the soldiers that under every circumstance we will make sure to get those bodies back, we will never leave them abandoned, we will even put our own lives on the line to get them back, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, that is pikuach nefesh. And that would be permissible. Which is an incredible, when you think psychologically, it's an incredible insight, and it's true. It's true. It's an amazing insight that because of that, we are going to allow what the Israeli army does. Now we get to the next part, which is, so what about the terrorist? And this is the part that's very uncomfortable for me. So you look at the rules of the Geneva Convention, and as we know, we're told, Rule 115, disposal of the dead. The dead must be disposed of in a respectful manner and their graves respected and properly maintained. Even though all the haters of the Jews defile the bodies of Jews all the time, even though they defile the tombstones of the Jews, even though they're going to Har HaZeisim and ruining everything, for some reason, we follow the Geneva Convention. Even though we get nothing in return, we somehow always follow the Geneva Convention, and we do. We're you know, the good ones who do what we're supposed to do. And Zaka can come along and take not only the body of a victim, a Jewish victim, but they'll also take the body of the terrorist themselves who created this entire havoc, who made this whole problem. And now they're being accused of discrimination because they're not giving the same dignity to the body of a terrorist as they are to the body of a Jewish innocent victim. It's an incredible thing when you think about it. We have rules of war, and none of them are followed, but somehow we go along with it. So this is a question. The Rambam writes, it's interesting, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs writes that when we talk about the mitzvah of Kvura, it only applies to a Jew. The Rambam's Lashon is, Shenikvar kol meisei Yisrael b'yom mosam. The Rambam writes, we have to bury kol meisei Yisrael, which very clearly indicates that we only have a biblical obligation to bury the Jewish dead. So as far as the halacha goes, it's not clear that we have an obligation at all to bury the meisei akum, those who pass away who are not Jewish. That's first of all. However, the Gemara does tell us in Gittin Daf Samach Aleph, we have a whole bunch of things that were told Mishum Eva. Because we want to have good relations with our neighbors, we don't want them to be angry, we are allowed to violate certain halachas, and we have to do certain things. Now, it's a question, how far do you take that? Well, you say, my neighbor's going to be angry if, take for example, my alarm goes off on Shabbat, starts ringing away. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. My neighbor is going to be extremely annoyed why I'm not turning it off and I'm disturbing his sleep. Correct? But it's Chilul Shabbos to turn it off. So how far do you take this concept of Mishum Eva? We don't want them to be upset with us. We want to make sure that we have good relations with them. So how far are you allowed to violate a halacha to make sure that you have good relationships with your neighbors, with neighboring countries, with enemies? With enemies in this case. It's a major question. But one of the things that the Mishnah tells us is that we have an obligation, Mishum Eva, to bury those non-Jewish bodies together. Not together doesn't mean in the same plot, but it means we have the same obligation to bury the Jewish bodies as we have to bury the non-Jewish bodies as well, Mishum Eva, Mepnei Darkei Shalom, because we want to make sure that we have good relationships with them. And you have to think about the fact that every time something like this happens, imagine if we wouldn't. You saw what happened when there's a mob that goes after a terrorist after something is committed. The world goes crazy. The world goes crazy, and you have to put yourself in their situation. Sometimes you look at these videos and you say, what's wrong with all them? What are they making such chaos? What are they going and rioting? You know why? Because they know that they almost lost their own lives. What do you want from them? Do you blame anybody for rioting? Do you blame anybody for trying to go and deface the body of a terrorist? Do you blame them? When you were this close to death and you were saved by a miracle? I don't blame anyone. I don't blame anyone. It's complete hysteria. But the world somehow always picks up on those stories and has a very different take on it. So Mipnei Darkei Shalom is a very serious consideration. We do have in Tanakh, interestingly, in Sefer Yehoshua, let's look at number Yud Gimel. In Sefer Yehoshua we're told, Vayisrof Yehoshua es ha'ai v'yasima tel olam shemama. Yehoshua burns down a whole city, ad hayom hazeh, and it's burnt out and it was never rebuilt. Ves melach ai tala ala eitz. And then the king of Ai, of this town, of this region, tala ala eitz. Yehoshua ben Nun hangs him. He wants everyone to know the war is over. Ad eis ha'arif. Until the nightfall, and then Yehoshua ben Nun tells them, kevo Hashem es shiva Yehoshua v'yiridu es nevlasam ala eitz. Yehoshua says, no, take him down, it's not respectful, and we should bury him. Why is that? Why did Yehoshua ben Nun go out of his way to bury his enemy, Melech Ai? He just burnt down a whole city. Why did Yehoshua ben Nun go out of his way to do so? So the reason why the Ramban on Chumash suggests is because we know, we said before, that there's an added consideration, there's an added factor when it comes to somebody who passes away in Eretz Yisrael. And that is, not only do we have this mitzvah of Kavur Tikburenu, not only do we have this Isser of Lo Salin Nivlaso Ala Eitz, that you're not allowed to wait, but we also have an added consideration of Velo Satame Asad Masla. You have to make sure that the land of Eretz Yisrael is always left in the highest level of Kedusha possible. And therefore, says the Ramban, that applies, that Isser applies to Jews and non-Jews alike. We have to keep the land of Israel in a holy state of being. And because of that, it doesn't matter who the person is, we have an obligation to bury that person. We can't have bodies lying around all over the place. Yes? You mean if we would leave them?
If we would not say the bodies, not give great honor to the
Right. So that's obviously a consideration. I know for anyone who's following the news, I think Netanyahu recently said that he's not going to give back the bodies unless he's promised that they don't make a whole ceremony out of it. Right? What?
He gave them back.
Right. So it's not turning into a political discussion. He gave them back. Whether it was right or was wrong is a question. If I was the prime minister, I don't know what I would do. But again, obviously your consideration is a very serious one. We have to do whatever we can to deter them. And the same way Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, we have every right to put our lives on the line to save, to retrieve a body of a Jewish chayal, because we want to make sure that we encourage them to fight as hard as they can. Well, the same goes in the opposite direction. Even though we have this mitzvah of L'Satam Yasan Moscha, we also have to obviously consider the fact that Pikuach Nefesh takes a very central role. I think another point just to think about is, you know, everyone always quotes from Golda Meir when she said that one day when peace comes, I'm going to be able to forgive the Arabs for killing us, but I'll never be able to forgive them for making our children murderers. And it's such a powerful statement. And I think we've become so callous sometimes because we've gotten so used to looking at the scenes of what's been going on. You know, you turn on the news and you say, oh, another pigua, another one. How much does it hurt us? How much does it hurt us? And we get to a point where we start to forget what's happening. We forget how many lives were just destroyed. How many families are ripped apart. We forget about everything that goes behind one of these terrorist attacks because we become so used to it. And I think that when you talk about questions like this, and when you talk about, oh, is Zaka right? Are they wrong? Should we bury them? Should we not? We have to keep in mind that just because our enemies don't value life doesn't mean we shouldn't value life. You know, Rav Asher Weiss told me once, he's the posek of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. And he said, I am proud to be the posek of a hospital that treats Jews and non-Jews alike, that will administer medical treatment to a terrorist and to a victim alike, because we believe in life. And just because they don't believe in life, it doesn't mean that we have a right to give up on our principles. We believe in life. We celebrate life. And this is what the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh writes. The last, you'll read it on your own, but the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh writes, we have a very difficult mitzvah in the Torah, and that is the Ir HaNidachas. If you have a whole city that serves Avodah Zarah, we have a mitzvah to burn down the whole city. Hacharim Tacharimim. Utterly destructive. You have to do everything to destroy every last remnant of that city. It's a difficult kind of mitzvah. It's a hard thing to swallow. That's not the way Jews are supposed to act. And over here, all of a sudden, uncharacteristically, we're told that we should go above and beyond and we should destroy the city, all men, women, and children, all the animals, all the property, everything. That's not the way we act. And after that, the pasuk says, V'nasan lecha rachamim v'rachamecha. Says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. Why does it say, immediately following the parsha of Ir HaNidachas, this mitzvah of destroying the city that has served Avodah Zarah, why does it say, V'nasan lecha rachamim, and God will give you mercy? What does that mean? Says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. You know what it means? Because perhaps we're concerned, like Golda Meir said, we're concerned that if we're going to go ahead and fulfill our obligation to destroy the city, we're going to become those people who hate life. We're going to become those people who destroy the world. Because we're going to get used to such behavior. And we're going to think that it's okay. And it's going to spill over into other things. And we're going to lose our soft, our beautiful sense of celebrating life. And therefore, says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, God comes immediately following that mitzvah. And he says, don't worry. V'nasan lecha rachamim v'rachamecha. I guarantee you, I assure you, I will give you an extra measure of mercy inside of your heart. Because you need it, and I feel we all need it. We've become so used to looking at these scenes and these images and these videos, and each one is more gruesome than the next, but it becomes a part of our life, and we forget the soft side of us that's supposed to remember what life is, and we forget how valuable every single one of these people are. And that's what we need. V'nasan lecha rachamim v'rachamecha. We need God's blessing that even though we discuss these issues, even though we talk about them, even though we tackle the halacha and we think about all the parameters of the halacha, but we have an obligation as Jews to be rachmanim, to have rachmanis on other people, to have mercy, to make sure that we always remember to be compassionate, it doesn't matter to who. And sometimes it means even to those who perhaps we hate or who hate us more than anything else, but we still celebrate life. We have to look from our perspective. Doesn't mean we shouldn't throw them in jail after they're done. But it means that we have an obligation to always celebrate life and always show that there's a value to life, even though everyone around us might not agree with our conclusion. So this is just a little bit of a glimpse into the halacha of the mitzvah of kvura. Again, there's a lot more to talk about, but this is just some of it. I can't say that I'm completely comfortable with everything. I think it's still a